Thanks for listening to the Best of Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
This is the Best of the Herd with Colin Cowherd on Fox Sports Radio.
Ah, here we go on a Thursday. Real sports, real stuff, live in Los Angeles. This is The Herd, wherever you may be and however you may be listening here on Fox Sports 1. It's great to have you in. Joy Taylor is joining me. Ryan Russillo joins me in 30 minutes. Tristan Thompson of the Cavs. Eric Mangini. Chris Sims. Jason McIntyre on a Thursday. Are you working tomorrow?
No, I thought we were all not working.
We're
tomorrow.
All off tomorrow. Oh, okay. So this is it. This is our Friday.
I wasn't
today.
Planning on being here tomorrow.
No, we're going all in today on today's show. We're really trying.
We're getting
today.
Our best stuff today.
Yeah, this is it. We're just all of it. Tomorrow off. So it's great to have you here. So you know we live in a world now, and maybe it's always been like this. You know, like recency bias. Like whatever happened last night is the world. And I said this on yesterday's show. I think the Lakers will beat the Blazers in the series, but there are some problems you have to look at. The Clippers are going to beat the Dallas Mavericks in the season. They lost last night. Series is 1-1. Okay. The Clippers lost a playoff game. That means what? Did anybody think they were going to go undefeated through the playoffs? Dallas has the best young player in the NBA. Dallas has two top 25 players. Dallas has a coach in Rick Carlisle who's going to get Hall of Fame votes. Dallas has depth. Dallas finished 11 games above 500. Dallas is good. Folks, KD, Stephen Clay, a dynasty, had 14 playoff losses. The Heatles, LeBron, Wade, and Bosch had double that, 28 playoff losses. With LeBron, the best player in the world, Bosch in his prime, and Wade not far from it, they were pushed to 7 games in Miami. These are in series they won by the Celtics, Pacers, and Spurs. The Heatles only had 2 playoff series in 4 years. They swept. It's hard, and now nobody has home court advantage. KD, Steph, and Clay, the first year, they rolled through it. Last 2 years after that, it was a struggle. I mean, go back to Shaq and Kobe. Shaq and Kobe had 3 years where they're viewed as unbeatable. The second title, they were. The year before that, Shaq and Kobe were pushed to a maximum 5 games in the first round. As a number one seed, 5 games at the time was your first round. And they went 5 games. The year after the second year, the third year, they went to 7 games before they got to the finals. This stuff is hard. It's hard to win playoff games. And the bubble's thrown a wrench into it. Because generally these, you know, the Lakers would have home court advantage. And the Bucks would have home court advantage. And the Clippers would have home court advantage. And the advantage is when you're a heavy favorite, and the Clippers are, and the Lakers are, and the Bucks are, is that you need a little juice. I mean, that's always been the thing about the first round. The favorites come in. Thank God you're at home because you know you're supposed to win in about 5 games. And what you need is juice. You need a little help from the crowd, and you don't have it. You got a digital board. And so it's a big advantage to the underdogs. The Bucks, the Clippers, and the Lakers are 1-3. Okay? So it's a huge – this is March Madness. It's even worse than March Madness. Even in the first round, Duke and North Carolina have more fans than Belmont and Coastal Carolina. So this is a huge advantage. I mean, we saw the Suns go 8-0, Portland play in. Teams like Memphis and the Nets, with not much to work with, had real, real advantages. Now it's just like you're just playing in a gym. Underdogs got nothing to lose. Pressure's all in the favorites. And by the way, the Clippers are still trying to figure out chemistry. That's A. We all know that. We don't think their chemistry's great. B, Patrick Beverley, who averages about 26, 27 minutes a night for the Clippers. He's a really good player. He didn't play last night. They don't know when they're getting him back. And C, Paul George was bad. And Paul George is not a superstar. He has bad playoff games all the time. So the 3 teams that we think are great, you know, we think are title teams, and I think you can throw Toronto into this, but let's just say Bucks, Lakers, Clippers. They're 1-3. And people forget this. If you go to the KD, the last year before KD got hurt in Golden State, the second year, they were pushed, the third year, excuse me, This is the KD, Steph, Clay, Draymond Warriors. They were pushed to 6 games in the first round by these Clippers, and Kawhi wasn't there yet, and Paul George wasn't there yet. That's a dynasty. And again, the Heatles had 28 playoff losses. They were pushed to 7 games 3 times in the years they won the championship. So this is, you got no home court advantage, big advantage, obviously, to the underdogs. Because the favorites in playoff series in the first round have always needed juice. They need something to lift them up. The underdogs don't. They're being told they have no chance. They don't need the juice. They're being told they have no chance to win the series. They got the juice. They got the chip on their shoulder. Favorites in the first round are sleepwalking through this thing. Milwaukee's defense now is bad. The Lakers haven't looked really energized in like 2 weeks. And last night, the Clippers without Patrick Beverley, off night for Paul George, just didn't have it. So this is great news. It's one of these that you'd think, because I love Tua, it would be bad news. This is actually great news. Ryan Fitzpatrick is going to start for the Miami Dolphins. This is great news for Tua. This is a really, really bad year to start as a rookie quarterback. And I want you to think about this. We would all admit Patrick Mahomes and Lamar Jackson look like superstars. I mean, you're talking 2 MVPs. One of them you consider the best quarterback ever. One of them was just voted Lamar Jackson best player in the NFL by team, by players, NFL.com. They weren't ready to start year one. Now, just think about this. Contextualize this. They had great head coaches, Andy Reid, John Harbaugh. They had very good rosters. Miami doesn't. They had preseason. They had OTAs. They had stability in the franchise. Baltimore's rock-solid ownership front office. Kansas City, rock-solid ownership front office. And Mahomes and Lamar Jackson, with all of those additives, were not ready to play. Joe Burrow is going to get mauled. Cincinnati has none of that, and Miami has very little of that. Miami now has a second-year head coach, a new offensive coordinator. They're rebuilding their O-line, and two of their wide receivers opted out. This is not good. Now, take Kyler Murray. I think most of us, I certainly look at Kyler Murray, and I think he had a very successful rookie year. He was 5-10-1. And they brought in a coach, Cliff Kingsbury, who used Kyler Murray's high school and college offense. They just brought it over. He was 5-10-1, and we went, it was pretty successful. But Kyler Murray, who's more athletic, significantly more athletic than Tua, was getting sacked 5 times a game his rookie year in the first month. I think he ended up getting sacked 50 times. And he has escapability much better than Tua. And all those shots, Tua doesn't have to take any of them. Because Arizona's O-line is a lot like Miami's today. Rebuilding. Not great. Not top 10 in the league. So this is great news. And by the way, I love Miami's direction. Joy and I have said this a thousand times. I have them at 7-9 this year in a so-so division where I think New England's got its worst team in 20 years. The Jets are a mess. Buffalo's good but limited at quarterback. I have them at 7-9. Fox Bet has their over-under at 6.5. People in the NFL love where Miami's going. The Vegas guys, the wise guys, have them at 6.5. And I'll give you another. And I love them, and I have them at 7-9. Yesterday I talked, it'll be on my Saturday podcast, I talked to a buddy, Chad Millman, who's in the gaming industry, sports gambling. And I asked him one of my questions. I've already taped it. It's on Saturday. I said, the smart guys, the wise guys, like, what is their number one over-under bet in the NFL? And he said, it's the Cincinnati Bengals under 5.5 wins. The smartest guys in Vegas are pounding bet Cincinnati wins fewer than 5 games. Why? This is an easy one. No OTAs, no preseason, tough division, rebuilding roster, no stability in the franchise historically. This is a sounds like bad news, great news for Tua. Now, I will say this. There is a part of the Miami schedule, and I did this with Lamar Jackson. Remember when I predicted he would start game 11 first year? There is a part of the schedule where Tua could come in. It's a Week 9, when they play Arizona, Jets by Jets, Bengals. Now, that, to me, 2 months in, offensive line coming together, new offensive coordinator, you work with him. That can be your preseason. The 8 weeks, you sit on the sidelines, play sparingly, watch Fitzpatrick take the hits. Week 9 is going to be my prediction. I predicted Lamar Jackson week 11. Week 9, Tua starts for the Miami Dolphins at Arizona, Jets by Jets Bengals. That's the time. It is not now.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
So, everybody last night, Clippers lost to the Mavs. Mavs are a good team, 11 over 500. Luka, best young star in the game. Dallas, a real team. Dallas just set this year a record, league history, the most efficient offense ever. It's like a real, you're not sweeping Dallas. They're a real team. But Paul George wasn't good last night, and he's up and down as a playoff guy. So the first thing that needs to be said is how your second best player plays in the playoffs matters. It's not an excuse. It's a reason. Look at the Lakers. Anthony Davis disappeared against Portland in the fourth. They lost. Milwaukee, Chris Middleton was awful. They lost to Orlando. The Clippers, Paul George last night had a stinker. They lost. By the way, Porzingis ejected Dallas game one. They lost. Like your second best player. We stare at stars in the NBA. And I get it. It's a star-driven league. But how your second player performs is crucial in these games. You can't – even Dame needed Melo to hit shots, Nurkic and C.J. McCollum to be big the other night. You can't carry a team in this sport anymore. It's too many good players. The second thing is there is a massive gap between, even if they're both Hall of Famers, and LeBron and AD are, and Pippen and MJ were, there's a massive gap between stars and the second best star on a team. I mean, LeBron this year was great in the fourth. AD all year disappeared in the fourth. They'll both be Hall of Famers. Kawhi is Mr. Clutch. Paul George, historically, is never clutch. That's the knock on him. Giannis is a dominant, consistent MVP. Chris Middleton disappears. Games, halves. The gap between the best player on a team and the second best. I mean, I loved Chris Bosh in his prime, but the gap between LeBron and Wade was massive. I mean, Chris Bosh once had a playoff game in Miami. He didn't score a point. So, and what happens in these playoffs, you rely on that second best guy, and sometimes second best guys disappear. That's why they're second best guys. Big gap. I mean, a prime example, the best Robin to a Batman in league history, many people believe is Pippen to MJ. Now you can go back in annals of basketball and argue, but for a long time, that was the argument. That's the best Robin to a Batman ever. The minute MJ went to baseball, they gave the team to Pippen. By the beginning of year two, Scotty was unraveling. DUI, gun charge, wouldn't come off the bench, had coaching issues with... By year two, he was unraveling. And Scottie's a Hall of Famer, one of the best slashers of all time. But the reality of Jordan is Jordan got tackled for 6 years before he won a title, 6 or 7. Jordan was literally the entire league. He carried the league. He carried Chicago. He carried his teammates. He carried his GM. He carried his owner. And Jordan handled it. Pippen by year two, the unraveling. That is the gap. So when Paul George struggles, it's not an excuse. It's a reason. The number two guy often is not close to the number one guy. And even when they're Hall of Famers, Paul George is going to get Hall of Fame votes. AD is going to be a Hall of Famer. So, Scottie Pippen, Hall of Famer.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
Works for The Ringer. He's my buddy Ryan Russillo, brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. Okay, it's recency bias. Let's freak out. Clippers lost. And I just watched it and I thought, Dallas is pretty good. Carlisle's probably going to get Hall of Fame votes. Luka's sick. Porzingis. And, you know, by the way, they just set a record for NBA offensive efficiency. And, Joy and I were talking about this, Ryan. These underdog teams, they don't have to go on the road to start a series. They're playing. I watched last night, and I'm like, this is just Dallas is playing with. I mean, it looked like they're just playing with house money. Last night, they looked like a better team, right?
Yeah, this this whole concept that the worst teams were going to be better than the better teams just because it was a bubble, it was hard for me to buy into. I'm like, why am I going to start picking the teams that aren't as good just because it's neutral? And yet what we've seen with the one seeds losing and then the Clippers splitting these first two. But we knew this about Dallas. Dallas is arguably, statistically at least, one of the best historical offenses we've ever seen. And they were one of the worst closing teams in recent NBA history. They had this number where they had lost like 7 games when they were up in the last minute.
Yes.
It was one of the worst numbers we'd seen in a couple decades. But what Luka does to defenders is already scary. I don't know what to do with him right now. Think about this Clippers team that has Beverly when they're healthy and then, of course, Kawhi and Paul George. Luka has gotten his switches against any of these players. He had a play in game one where he drove right into Kawhi's chest and Kawhi bounced off of Luka. And I get that Luka's bigger, but his handle, the tightness of it, his understanding of angles at such a young age, he basically has moments where he goes, all right, I'm just going to drive on you this entire time. And by the way, at 6'9", 6'8", I have the vision to kick it out to shooters. So they play a little bit like Houston, but he's so good on these drives that we're talking about a really good defensive Clippers team with great individual defenders that are lost with him.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting when you look at, I was just talking about, there's such a gap. Even Pippen was the best Robin ever, and the minute they gave him the franchise for 2 years, by year two, emotionally he unraveled. The pressure of being the number one. I mean, LeBron was great in the fourth quarter this year. AD was not. And I look at Paul George and I think to myself, he's a good player, but what Paul did last night is what Paul does one out of three playoff games. Like, this is why Kawhi has to score 34 for them to win the title, right? This is why LeBron can't be super passer like he was the other night. Like, we're all like, oh, LeBron's such a great visionary. Yeah, that's great, but I need 34 from you. So I watch Paul George and I'm like, this is why the Clippers can't roll through every series. Paul gives you this every third playoff game, and since I've been watching him.
Look, Paul George is, we know he's a max guy. You'd all want him on your team. If you're running a team, you're like, hey, we can get Paul George. It's incredible. I mean, think about it. The Lakers thought they had him. Oklahoma City ends up with him. They were thrilled to have him. And then the Clippers are like, we're going to give you a million draft picks for him. But it's very simple with Paul George, and I think some of these guys that are below that first tier, which is a very small group of guys that bring you every single night. If Paul George gets 30 in a playoff game, I'm not surprised. When he gets 13, I'm not surprised. He had 0 in the first half. He woke up a little bit later on, but at that point, you're like, okay, well, where have you been? I understood he had foul trouble, but I went through it. Kevin Durant, in 139 playoff games, has had 8 real games below 20 points, okay? Think about that. There's like 2 where he was hurt, but there's 8 games where he didn't get to 20 out of 139. Paul George, not counting the first 3 playoff series of his career where he just wasn't a primary guy at all, almost a third of his playoff games – end up being a sub-20 guy. So, look, we understand how talented he is, but this thing happens with announcers where the secondary guy goes off. You're like, oh, he doesn't get enough credit. Well, he doesn't get enough credit because he has games like in game 2 where you're like, is Paul George out there? Or are they running this through Marcus Morris tonight?
Yeah. You know, it's funny. Joy and I have talked about this, and this isn't obviously verified, but it's like the young players who are single, no kids, they go to this bubble, and they're like,
I can't wait for this. Never mind.
Here we go. So the young guys are like, I ball, I nap, I eat, I play Xbox, I have fun. The old guys, kids, you don't have those yet. Wait till you have kids, and you're sitting around all night. You don't talk to your – and then they have marriages. So LeBron and Giannis, they keep talking about all this. They're older guys. They've been in the league 7-8 years. And Luka, Ja Morant, Michael Porter Jr., they're just – you know, is there something about – let's just take Milwaukee. The mood, the body language, what's wrong with Milwaukee? They're not the same team right now.
I'd have to be down there to know. You know, those are the things we sort of hear about after the fact. You're like, hey, this team really doesn't get along. Because I was asking, we had Seth Curry on the podcast, and I go, do you hang out with other teams? He's like, well, our team's pretty tight. He's like, we don't really hang out with different guys. But you have to imagine how weird that dynamic would be. But like, why is Dave hanging out with the Orlando Magic? And I'm just thinking, you know what I mean? I think what's happened, what does happen in these series is that Milwaukee goes in with a lot of expectations about themselves because they were a dominant statistical team this year,
right,
with how they were beating on teams. And Orlando won 33 games. So, you know, Orlando took advantage of a few things. Middleton had another one of those kind of off, you know, Paul George-like games. Milwaukee has this tendency to let you shoot against them, which is kind of weird for a team that you feel pretty good about defensively. But as far as body language, the whole thing. Like, I've got to see a second game before I'm ready to really start worrying about Milwaukee, because I can't fathom that an Orlando team that wasn't going to get to 500 this year is going to be one of the great point differential teams we've ever seen in the regular season.
But we talked about this yesterday. We said Giannis plays great with a lead and downhill. It's Lamar Jackson. But when Lamar trailed against Tennessee just by 10 points in the third quarter, you're like, uh-oh, this is trouble. Even the Baltimore staff, you could tell from their playing call. Mahomes is down 24-0. You're like, yeah, let's just, you know, get it together. It'll be fine. Giannis, this is why I can't just anoint Giannis as the next face of the league. When he gets behind, Ryan, he's not as scary. He's still good, but he's not as scary. Can we acknowledge that LeBron is still, and Kawhi are kind of a gap above Giannis in that, behind or not, I feel like LeBron and Kawhi, their game isn't marginalized.
Well, whenever we do this with any of these guys that are trying to be the top guy in the league, yeah, we got to see it. We got to see more than blowing a 2-0 lead in the Eastern Conference Finals against the Raptors, because that's all we have right now. That's Giannis's biggest accomplishment. But as far as comparing him to, like, if the default here is that I have to argue he's Pat Mahomes, I'm already going to lose the argument, because we don't have anything like that. So part of the reason I think you may think, and I'm not sure that I agree with you on that one, is that they beat teams so bad this year. That's why I keep getting that back to the point differential. Giannis was only playing like 30 minutes a night. I mean, it's crazy to think somebody this young who's an MVP and the whole system was like, we don't need to play him this much. I mean, you could knock him and say, well, you know, if they're down and he's not a great shooter, is that a flaw? But you could use the same argument against Steph Curry when you go, well, if the shot's not falling, Steph in a tight playoff game can't always get you to the rim and get you an easier bucket. And you're like, I don't know, man. I would say this. The bigger issue is that Giannis has had Middleton's let him down, Bledsoe's let him down. And they are a really good defensive team that does space out everybody on offense. And the argument against Milwaukee would be, okay, you do only two things. I mean, Barkley was talking about the other night. It's Giannis layups or it's kick out threes, and your number one guy doesn't shoot enough. But it's still the Orlando Magic. And I think as weird as that first game was, I'm sorry. Like, I can't believe the Magic are going to really end up making this like a thing where we're saying, are we writing off Milwaukee this soon?
So I don't want to get into your personal life, but I'm sure you've had a lot of girlfriends, and I always have a theory on this. If you're going to therapy in year seven, it's just too hard. But by year seven, if you can't come to – okay, so I look at the Sixers.
What are you talking about right now? Are you saying you would be dating somebody and not married and in therapy in year seven? Because then you should have gone to therapy way before that. Sorry.
I'm saying is when relationships are right, it works pretty quickly. I'm so over the Sixers. God, I'm just so over it. I mean, at some point, can you solve the Embiid-Simmons issue right here on our show today? Because I'm done with it.
No, and it used to be worse. When you look at the on-court, off-court with those guys. And this is – I knew this was going to happen. There's a couple teams that are facing real, and I would say therapy-type issues. But they're just going to say, hey – like, there's people right now staying in the relationship because of a pandemic. And I would imagine the Sixers may stay in some of these relationships because they're going to go – that was the bubble, you know, and hey, Ben was hurt.
Yeah.
I think the first thing would be you would give another coach a chance here. I know everybody, and I've brought it up before. I just think, unfortunately, for Simmons and Embiid, their skill set, the things that they're both good at, they're mismatched with kind of the worst version of the other guy, where Simmons would probably be better playing more in a Giannis-type style where he can drive and he can kick out to everybody instead of having maybe one of the best centers we've ever seen talent-wise kind of standing in his way. The numbers did get a little bit better with those two, but I'll always kind of challenge everybody with this. You have to know what's coming back that makes sense, because we get real worked up about break it up. Okay, for what though? What transaction exists out there where I split up Embiid and Simmons and I actually like what we're getting back, where we feel like we're better? Because the other scary thing for the Sixers right now is they've got two of the worst contracts in the league with Harris and Horford.
Yes.
And I, you know, like Brett Brown, none of these coaches want to get on these guys anymore. We know that. The guys we grew up watching, they would lay into their guys after game two. But here come the Sixers down 25 in the fourth quarter being like, all right, guys, full court press, Hoosier style. And they give up back-to-back offensive rebounds the first two possessions. And you go, hey, it's not just that the other team's lighting it up. Your effort level is just not locked in. And I think you're right in that it's a very frustrated group. And I myself am kind of sick of talking about it.
Okay, a minute left, Ryan. AD disappearing act in the fourth quarter. Is it psychological? Is it the way LeBron plays? It's game two tonight. Like, you explain AD's fourth quarter disappearing act.
Sometimes I think it's the way they trap him defensively, and he's just a really smart player, and he plays off the trap. But then sometimes it's like, hey, we need you to do this. Two real quick things. I'm not ready to put AD in this group of the number twos that aren't as good. I know you are. I know you've been kind of down on him. I listen enough to the show that you're not an AD guy. He's 30-12 in 14 playoff games. Some of the numbers he put up with the Pelicans, yes, they didn't do a lot, but they are monster, monster numbers. So I'm not ready to put him in as this playoff guy that's super inconsistent because the numbers are incredible. But we saw about the last 4 minutes of game one, the game is in the balance against Portland. What did they do? They went small. They went small with Anthony Davis. And if that's what you're telling me, if Vogel's telling me as a coach, I kind of like this lineup better, then what are we screwing around with?
Yeah.
Like, enough of this center charade, especially against a guy like Hassan Whiteside or Jokic, Nurkic. Get him out of there. Have Davis just move around and set up in some different spots. I know you've been on this big fourth quarter thing, but I'm just not there enough with Davis to start worrying about him not being able to be a good Robin.
By the way, you're not the only person that listens to this show. America needs me for honest takes, Russillo.
Sports therapist over here. I mean, we hit on what's going on with you lately. a lot of counseling, a lot of references. You all right?
I'm great, by the way. Everything's good.
I know you are. Yeah, okay, good.
The Ringer, Ryan Russillo. Good seeing you, buddy. Good podcast. Great podcast, the Ryan Russillo podcast.
Want more Herd? The Herd streams 24 hours a day, 7 days a week within the iHeartRadio app. Search Herd to listen live or on demand whenever you'd like.
People in Ohio think I don't like their football teams, the Browns, a horrible franchise. I call them out. They think it's hating. I think it's honesty and accuracy. Cincinnati, Joe Burrow's going to be awful this year. It's not his fault. It's just a bad year to have to start for a bad franchise in a brutally tough division. I think the Browns, the Steelers, and the Ravens. I don't think there's a division in football that's got better front sevens than those three combined. It's just unbelievable. Baltimore's and Pittsburgh's could be the best in the league, 1-2. It's just sick. Burrow's going to be over his skis. But I do get the Buckeyes' frustration in the Big Ten not playing. The Bengals are playing in Ohio. The Browns are playing in Ohio. The Cincinnati Bearcats collegiately are playing in Ohio. They're having high school football in Ohio. People will play during Thanksgiving in their backyard in Ohio, in parks. And Ohio State, the best historic football franchise in the state, can't play. I get it. I get the anger. I get the frustration. Proximity matters. You know, it's different. You know, I've always said this. If my brother-in-law or something did much better than me professionally, it's one thing if he lives in another state. What if he was my neighbor? Oh, he'd be driving in with a new sports car again, and they're going on another vacation. Proximity matters. Ohio State's looking around. Everybody right around them is playing in their own state, and they're the big dogs. It's frustrating. I get it. Proximity, you know, it's like when you're a kid and all the kids are playing outside, you look out your window and your mom is mad at you. You're grounded and you can't go play with the kids, but you can see them all playing on a sunny day in the summer. I feel bad for Ohio State. Also, they don't care about outside of Michigan. They don't see themselves really as a Big Ten team. Ohio State fans see themselves as Alabama. And they see themselves as Clemson and Notre Dame. They're a national player, Georgia, LSU, outside of Michigan. And Michigan's not really at their level as a national title contender. Ohio State sees itself. I mean, the conversation Ohio State fan has is not about beating Wisconsin. They do that almost every year. It's about beating Alabama and beating Clemson. That's how, you know, Oklahoma. That's how they view themselves. So those guys are all playing. Oklahoma's playing and Clemson's playing and Bama's playing and Georgia's playing and Notre Dame is playing and they're not playing. So I get it. Like, this is one of those times I get the anger and resentment of the Ohio State players, their fans, everybody in their state's playing, including high school. Everybody's playing. High school guys don't get paid. High school guys don't have probably the lung capacity of a great college player. I mean, it's I get it. This is such an abnormal year in that, hockey and the NBA are playing in a bubble. UFC rented an island. Baseball, endless season, down to 60 games. Part of me thinks, could one of these big corporations lighten up for a second? Could the Big Ten say, go play. Go join the Big 12 for a year. I mean, it's an abnormal year. Well, contractually, give me a break. We're going to look at small print. Ohio State's a football power. It is a massive disadvantage in a, you know, we're dealing now, the ACC, the SEC, the Big 12, the Big 10, they all compete against each other for the same great high school players. And this morning, all the rivals to Ohio State can say, they're not committed, man. That conference is, they're not really committed in it. and it probably cost them some recruits. So this is one of those, I get the angry fan. Usually the angry fan is delusional, doesn't have an argument. I get Ohio State's anger. And I do wonder, and again, it's far more complicated than me, a sports guy, talking about it on the air. But I do think, could the Big Ten lighten up? And listen, let's say Ohio State was allowed to go play and they joined a conference. And they broke the Big Ten contract. By the way, Ohio State could go independent tomorrow and succeed. If Illinois went independent, program's done. Nobody cares. Nobody cares in Illinois. But if Ohio State went independent, hell, BYU makes it as an independent. Navy. So Ohio State could go independent in football, just say, we'll make a schedule up every year and do just fine. I think the Big Ten, without Ohio State, doesn't have a single national player. Not once. It's like the Pac-12 right now. If USC is down, they don't have a single national contender on an annual basis. So I get it. I think the Big Ten could lighten up, understand the value Ohio State brings to the conference nationally. The only national, like year after year, every year Ohio State's in the top four or five, they can win a title. Wisconsin's not. Wisconsin's great. It's a great Big Ten football power. It's not a great national power. It's a good program. So, but, you know, it's complicated. You have contracts. You know, everybody wants to own everybody. And I would consider, if I ran the Big Ten, I would consider saying, go schedule some games. Keep your name out there. Keep playing.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
I never feel like I have to defend the powerful. I mean, LeBron and Tom Brady are great. I don't have to defend them. But I do. There is something in my genetic makeup, my DNA, where it bothers me when I think somebody's way better than he's given credit for. Maybe I feel like sometimes, you know, maybe that's a personal thing. I don't know. But it does bother me when there's an athlete and I'm like, can you give him a little love here? Like, he's not getting respect. Derek Carr cracks me up. So there's an article out today about the five or six quarterbacks that have a lot to gain and lose in the NFL, and they talk about Derek Carr. And I'm like, they're talking about Derek Carr is going to get replaced by Marcus Mariota. Okay, Derek Carr is way better than Marcus Mariota. Now, Nick Foles and Trubisky, I would go with Foles. Derek Carr's good. Let me give you an example. Derek Carr has largely been carrying this S show for about 5 years. He's been carrying them. Last year, he had a rookie running back and a rookie wide receiver and a new wide receiver and a new tight end, 4,000 yards, passer rating over 100, 70% completion percentage. Are you kidding me? Yet he's going to get replaced. Those are great numbers on a terrible defensive team where he has to pass, usually because they trail by the third quarter by double digits. Derek Carr is the only quarterback left in the league that's good and won't get any love. It's very Tony Romo. Let me talk about Tony Romo for a second. So Tony Romo was classic because Tony Romo played for the Cowboys. And the Raiders are a big brand, by the way. But Tony Romo made some really big gaffes in some big television games. And then he dropped the snap. Tony Romo dropped the snap against Seattle in a playoff game. And it's like, Tony Romo's not clutch. Hell, if that's true, Tony Romo was unbelievably clutch. He's the fourth highest passer rating in the history of the NFL in the fourth quarter. Tony Romo was totally clutch. I argued it for years, but because he had a couple of big gaffes in big Cowboy massive rating TV games, he's not clutch. Tony Romo has 29 career fourth quarter come from behind drives. That's more than Joe Montana. Okay, Tony Romo was clutch. He's clutch. Really clutch. All-time clutch. Fourth all-time, passer rating fourth quarter. And this is Derek Carr. Because of the instability of the Raiders, he's on his fourth coach, because the stadium's a mess, the owner's the poorest owner, that I think the Raiders bring down his brand. I think Derek Carr is better than the organization he plays for. Last year, he had the second highest completion percentage to Drew Brees. He was eighth in yards with a bunch of rookies. He was a new receiver, a new tight end, and a rookie wide receiver. He was ninth in passer rating, above Aaron Rodgers and Deshaun Watson. And by the way, he doesn't throw any picks. Don't we give Aaron Rodgers all this credit? We're always like, Aaron never throws picks. You get all the good and never the bad. Derek Carr doesn't throw any picks. And so I thought today I'll do my my blind resume game with Derek Carr, that the Raiders pull his brand down. Now, I don't think Derek's a top five quarterback. I have him about 11th or 12th. But this idea that Bruce Gradkowski was on our show yesterday, senior analyst, pro football focused, analyst, analytics. Here's what he said about the Mariota Derek Carr comparison.
I don't think Mariota holds Carr's jockstrap, to be honest with you. I think Carr, the way he is as a passer, the dude can sling it. I mean, he can make plays. And he's a top 10 passing grade for us last year. He's been in the top 10, you know, two times out of his career. Mariota's never been there. Mariota's never sniffed more than a 72 passing grade. And Carr has had a 77 passing grade three seasons already. So I just think as a passer, Carr is above and beyond.
Listen, Derek Carr had a year in 2016 where he was a borderline MVP. If you remember that year, he was 12-3. He had 7 fourth quarter game-winning drives. Now, I'm not putting him in the elite category of the Lamars and the Russells and the Rodgers. I'm not. But good God, folks, he's the only really good top 12 quarterback in the league that gets no love from anybody. Hell, his coach doesn't like him. So let's do blind resume. So here are the stats that matter. What's your completion percentage? What's your passer rating? And what's your TD to interception ratio? So for our listeners on radio, he completes 64% of his throws. His passer rating's a 91. And he throws 2.3 touchdowns for every interception. So blind resume. The guy next to him has the same completion percentage, slightly higher passer rating, and less of a TD interception ratio. So who is that? Oh, it's Philip Rivers. And Philip Rivers, by the way, last 3 years has had unbelievable weapons, has a great GM. And oh, by the way, many of you say he's better than Eli Manning. You'd vote him into the Hall of Fame. So Derek Carr's career numbers are, and by the way, the best GM in the NFL is arguably Chris Ballard, Indianapolis. He went and signed no good Philip Rivers. Okay, give me another one. Okay, this quarterback, blind resume, has a lower completion percentage than Carr, slightly higher passer rating, and much lower TD to interception ratio. Much lower. Who is that? Oh, Joe Montana. Okay. The GOAT. All right. Yeah, okay. See who's winning this game? Okay. And by the way, ownership Raiders, not good. Coaching stability, not good. Defense, always playing from behind. That hurts. Not good. All right, let's do another blind resume. Because you could say, well, that one, Colin, is a kind of a generation thing. It was a different game. Okay. So this radio listener's completion percentage is lower than Carr. Passer rating is slightly lower than Carr. And the TD to interception ratio is lower than Carr. Who is this? Oh, Matt Stafford. Okay. Number one pick, Matt Stafford. Well, I mean, it's the Lions. Excuse me, it's the Raiders. And Matt Stafford, by the way, had Calvin Johnson, who, in my opinion, after Randy Moss, is the best college wide receiver prospect I ever saw. Let's do another passer rating. Or another blind resume. Okay, this one is, I love this game. Okay, this quarterback has a slightly higher completion percentage, slightly higher passer rating, and a slightly lower TD to interception ratio. Who's this? Okay, the guy's going to get into the Hall of Fame, Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan's going to get into the Hall of Fame if he has 4 more years like this. MVP. And by the way, Matt Ryan's had better ownership. Not even question, Arthur Blank. Way better ownership. A very good GM, Thomas Dimitroff. Always had star receivers. He had Tony Gonzalez, Roddy White, Julio Jones. Now they had the Ridley kid. I mean, they've always had great. And they had Kyle Shanahan for a couple years as an offensive coordinator. Look at that. The passer rating is higher for Matt Ryan. Not staggering. But you keep telling me Derek Carr. I'm not saying Derek Carr. And by the way, I've always said I have Matt Ryan as the 9th or 10th best quarterback in the league. Every time I do it, I say Matt's about 10 to me. I don't think he's a great athlete. Don't think he has a great arm. But he's about top 10 quarterback in his prime. I got Carr at 12. There you go. Marcus Mariota's not Derek Carr. Come on, watch the games. This is not close. Oh, I got another one. Give me another blind resume. I'm dominating this game, right? I'm dominating the world. So this guy has a significantly lower completion percentage than Derek Carr. This guy's got a slightly lower passer rating and a lower TD to interception ratio. Who is this guy? The heck? Andrew Luck. All right. Now, Andrew Luck played with really bad offensive lines. Carr's offensive line's pretty good.
We did that just to make you mad.
But I think the point stands.
I think it just all, it really all derailed for Derek Carr after that injury. Because that year in 2016 that you're talking about where he was in the conversation for MVP, that injury just, it just took him off the map. And ever since then, he's just been fighting to get his respect back.
And some people think that the post-injury quarterbacks don't want to get hit as much. So he lets, the knock I've heard on Derek Carr is post-injury. He lets go of the ball too quick. He doesn't want to get hit again. He knows another injury. He knows, first of all, rehab's brutal. Nobody likes rehab. So when, like when Tom Brady got hurt the following year, Tom didn't, he would get ticked off if you got next to his knees.
Yeah, he still doesn't like it.
He doesn't like anybody by his knees. So, you know, the knock on Derek Carr psychologically, he lets it go a little too quick. He doesn't sit in the pocket. But I will say this, the Raiders drafted three more wide receivers. They're going to score points this year. But you got to give me a break on Derek Carr can't play. You got to give me a break on Mariota's going to beat him out. Like, they're not the same guy. Carr's better.